So today we're going to be looking at the book of Colossians, chapter 1, beginning with verse 9. Colossians chapter 1. And before I read this, I just want to mention that when Paul wrote, there was never a doubt what he believed or who he believed in. And when Paul would preach, there was never a doubt who he believed in or what his belief was. Because you've heard me say before that if Paul was in our culture and if he was invited to speak at a public place and if they would have told him, okay, you can come, you can talk about anything, but don't talk about Jesus, that wouldn't be possible with Paul. And here's an example. This passage is a perfect example of that concerning the Apostle Paul. Look at what he says. For this reason also, since the day we heard of it, we have not ceased to pray for you, and to ask that you may be filled with the knowledge of his will and all spiritual wisdom and understanding, so that you will walk in a manner worthy of the Lord, to please him in all respects, bearing fruit in every good work and increasing in the knowledge of God. Strengthened with all power, according to his glorious might, for the attaining of all steadfastness and patience, joyously giving thanks to the Father who has qualified us to share in the inheritance of the saints in light. For he rescued us from the domain of darkness and transferred us to the kingdom of his beloved Son, in whom we have redemption, the forgiveness of sins. He is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn of all creation. For by him all things were created, both in the heavens and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or dominions or rulers or authorities. All things have been created through him and for him. He is before all things, and in him all things hold together. He is also head of the body, the church, and he is the beginning, the firstborn from the dead, so that he himself will come to have first place in everything. For it was the Father's good pleasure for all the fullness to dwell in him, and through him to reconcile all things to himself, having made peace through the blood of his cross. Through him, I say, whether things on earth or things in heaven. So he makes it very clear what he believes and who he believes in. And you noticed how many times he referenced Christ there, whether it was with the pronoun he or him or Jesus or the Father, whichever one, you know how much he's focusing on this person of Jesus. And he's really passionate about Jesus, and the reason he's passionate about it is because it has had an impact on his own life, because Jesus changed his own life. Because you remember, Saul was the one who would persecute Christians, believing he was doing the right thing, persecute Christians, and then finally God got a hold of him, and he was saved on the Damascus Road. His life was completely changed. And when we think about what actually happens with him, when he begins to start ministering to these people, they start to wonder. In fact, we have stories in the book of Acts where we have one person that God even told him to go work alongside the Apostle Paul. And the response back to God was, well, now, wait a minute. Isn't he the guy that was killing Christians? God, I don't know if I really want to go work alongside of him, because you don't know. And then, of course, probably somebody, maybe from time to time, and you've heard this in the church world. I've been skeptical also, where somebody will say, "Well, I know what they testify, but I don't know. Can someone like that really change?" I mean, yeah, they testify Christ now. They testify they know Christ now, but is that really possible? I heard that it was done before, where a church was looking for a pastor, and a gentleman comes up, the person in charge of the search committee comes up and reads a resume off to the congregation, which usually isn't the case. Usually they just do behind them with the actual search committee themselves, but they read a resume off and just read this horrific resume of what this person has done, how horrible his life has been, how he's murdered, just everything. He's done it all. And then at the end they say, would anybody like this person to be your pastor? And everybody, no. And he said, well, I just read off the resume of the Apostle Paul. It's hard to grasp, isn't it? It's hard for us to digest and process that thought of somebody that was so evil, somebody that was completely on the other side. Now all of a sudden he's over here and you're supposed to accept that. And usually when we hear a story like that, what do? Usually we say, well, I'll believe it when I see it. Okay, let me see the fruit first because I don't know. And the reason for that is why? Because we've been burned, haven't we? We have been burned so many times by people who have stood up and said, I'm all for Christ now. And then the next thing you know, something comes up that they're not. Whether it was an evangelist, a televangelist, or a minister, or a politician, or whoever, somebody just touting the name of Christ, and then you find out they're really not for Christ, and then you're disappointed. And so that makes us skeptical, and so we start to wonder, is this really true? Well, the difference we have in Paul is that we know for certain that the change that happened in Paul's life was completely true, because from that day forward, there was never a relapse into his old life at all. He was a completely changed man. And the reason he was changed wasn't because of what he did or what he worked out or how he did this, but he was changed because of Christ. And this is why he gives all the glory to Christ. And that's what he's doing in this passage here. He's giving all the glory to Christ. You cannot keep him from talking about Jesus. Always about Jesus. So if we go to the beginning, the first thing is, this is a prayer that he has at the beginning here in verses 9 through 12. He says, for this reason also, since the day we heard of it, we have not ceased to pray for you and to ask that you may be filled with the knowledge of his will in all spiritual wisdom and understanding. So he's telling the church at Colossae, he says, we have not stopped praying for you, and we're going to continue to pray for you, and we ask that you will be filled with the knowledge of his will. That you will understand God's direction in everything that is going on and everything that's happening in your life. You would understand who God is. You'll be filled with the knowledge of his will in all spiritual wisdom and understanding. So that you may walk in a manner worthy of the Lord to please him in all respects. So you look at this prayer and you start to think about this. This is kind of extreme, isn't it? Because especially when he gets to hear that we're praying for you. What are you praying for us? That you would understand the will of God. That you would come to the knowledge of his will. That you would understand who God is. And that you would please him in all respects. In other words, that you would please him in everything that you do. Now, if I was to ask, at 9 o'clock we made the joke that this was Honesty Sunday. I don't know if you saw it when you came in or not, but you know, today's Honesty Sunday. This is a Sunday you're supposed to be honest, which I don't know what you're supposed to do all the other Sundays. But let's just call this Honesty Sunday. And if I was to ask for a show of hands of how many of you believe that you please him in all respects, in every single thing that you do, how many of you would raise your hand? That's a pretty strong statement, isn't it? That's a pretty bold statement. Yes, I please the Lord in every respect. But the powerful thing about it is you go to the book of Thessalonians and you see Paul did say that in chapters 1 and chapter 2 of Thessalonians. He tells them, he says, you guys know when we were with you that we were glorifying to God. And in fact, go ahead. He tells the church of Thessalonica. He says, go ahead. Tell me something we did that wasn't of God. Would you be willing to say that to somebody? Would you be willing to say that to the people you live with? Go ahead. Show me something I've ever done that isn't of God. Go ahead. I dare you. Show me something over the last 10 years. 5 years. 1 year. Month. Week. This morning. Show me something this morning that wasn't. But see, this is where we get off base sometimes, because Paul's whole purpose in this prayer is he wants the church at Colossae to please God. That's the whole purpose. He's saying, we're praying for you that you would please God, because there was people coming into the church and the church at Colossae, and they were messing everything up. Everything that Paul had built, they were coming in and they were teaching heresy. They were coming in saying that Christ is not the answer, and that if Christ is the answer, you need more, that Jesus isn't enough, and you have to have something else. And Paul's saying, we've been praying for you, and we want you to be filled with all wisdom and knowledge and understanding so that you may walk in a manner worthy of him and please him in all respects, bearing fruit in every good work and increasing in the knowledge of God. And then he says, we want you strengthened with all power according to his glorious might for the attaining of all steadfastness and patience joyously, giving thanks to the Father who has qualified us to share in the inheritance of the saints in light. And then in verse 13, he starts talking about what Christ has done. And when you read this, you start to understand that Paul's taking this personal, talking about what Christ has done for him. He says, for he rescued us from the domain of darkness. Now think about Paul saying that about himself. He took me out of this life and he brought me into this new one. He completely changed me out of darkness and he transferred us, or me, to the kingdom of his beloved Son, in whom we have redemption, the forgiveness of sins. Then he goes on to explain who Jesus is. He is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn of all creation. The image of the invisible God. One of the things that kids always love to throw at the pastor, you know, I take a risk every month on Ask Pastor Chad, but one thing I've learned over the years, one of them that they're like, I have something for you, I'm going to stump you, I'm going to get you this time, I'm going to stump you, and believe me, there have been times I have sweated it out, and afterwards thinking, man, that was a horrible answer, but I got through it. But when they say, what does God look like? There actually is a simple answer for that. Maybe you've been asked that before. What does God look like? Jesus said, if you've seen me, you've seen the Father. Now, of course, that doesn't tell us how long his hair was or, you know, all that, what his skin tone actually was or anything like that. But right here, Jesus is the image of the invisible God. That's why I think it was the theologian H. Orton Wiley who said that when we get to heaven, the only one we're going to see of the Trinity is Jesus because he's the only one that has a body. Jesus is the image of the invisible God. So you want to know what God looks like? Look at Jesus. You want to know how God acts? Look at Jesus. You want to know how God treats people? Look at Jesus. You want to know how God loves? Look at Jesus. Everything comes back to Jesus. He's the image of the invisible God. He's the firstborn of all creation. Verse 16, by him all things were created, both in the heavens and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or dominions or rulers or authorities, all things have been created through him and for him. He is before, still talking about Christ, he is before all things, and in him all things hold together. He is also head of the body, the church, and he is the beginning, the firstborn from the dead, so that he himself will come to have first place in everything. For it was the Father's good pleasure for all the fullness to dwell in him, and through him to reconcile all things to himself, having made peace through the blood of his cross. Through him, I say, whether things on earth or things in heaven. So it's all about Jesus, and it's all about what Jesus has done and how Jesus has rescued and rescued them from the domain of darkness. And as Paul's saying this from his personal perspective, he's saying, he's done it for me, and I'm praying that he will do this for you, and I'm praying that you will be reminded of this truth, even though the heresy is coming in and infecting the church. So what does all this mean then? Some of you are sitting there going, would you get to the point, please? Don't worry, my wife says that to me quite often. Would you get to the point? You know, what's interesting, you've known this about me, those of you who know me for a while, that I have no problem talking. And it's not even that I don't have a problem talking, I actually enjoy talking. And not just the fact that I enjoy talking, I pretty much never stop talking. If you see me in the car by myself, don't be surprised if my mouth is moving. I'm still talking. I never stop. I verbally process everything. I don't know how you process, but I have to verbally process everything. And when I was in college, I used to pace back and forth reading the notes out loud, and my roommate was in there with me one time, and I said, is this bother you? Because I can go somewhere else. He goes, no, it doesn't bother me. And then about 15 minutes into it, he goes, you know, there's another place you could go. You know, because I verbally process everything. And I think some of you heard the one time where several years ago, it was Saturday night, I was over at the church, and on the way home, as I was driving, I was kind of verbally processing the message I was going to preach the next Sunday. and I was just kind of saying it out loud so it stays with, you know, that's just how I do it. You know, I don't write much down, as you can see. I don't write much down. Usually it's just right here. I verbally process it. That's just how it happens. And so I'm driving, and I'm just saying this, and so my wife calls me on my cell phone, and I answer. We talk a little bit, and then I hang up, put down the phone, and then I continue to drive home. And as I'm driving home, I'm still going about my business, processing what I'm going to preach the next Sunday, saying it out loud in the car by myself. I get home, I walk through the door, the kids are there, wife's there, mother-in-law happened to be visiting, and they're all smiling. And I was wondering, okay, what's going on? Why is everybody looking at me smiling? And my wife speaks up and says, "How are you doing, Chad?" And I said, "Fine." She said, "What are you preaching on tomorrow, Chad?" And I said, she goes, "'Cause we already know." You ever like thought you hung up the phone, but you didn't, right? I've had that before. Have you ever had that happen where somebody leaves you a lengthy voicemail they didn't mean to leave you? They didn't hang up and you hear like the next 20 minutes of their day, right? So I've never had a problem talking, you know, just the whole idea of talking has never been an issue. Paul is coming in here, and he has this whole thing that everything is about Christ. And if you get Paul to talk, I mean, Paul's going to talk. All he's going to talk about is Jesus. All he's going to talk about is Christ. And what he's doing with this passage is he's coming in saying that I'm here to change your perspective. You have an incorrect perspective, and I'm here to change it. That's what I'm trying to do. Because people were coming in, and they were infecting the church with the heresies that Jesus wasn't it. And so he comes in saying, "I'm here to change your perspective. That's why I'm here. That's my goal. You're thinking this way, which you shouldn't be, and hopefully after you read my letter, you're going to be thinking this way, because I'm here to change. You're over here now, which is wrong, so now I'm going to shift your thinking this way." We need that, don't we? My guess would be probably every single one here, as we read through that passage there a couple times, probably all of us looked at that and said, "Yes, well, yeah, okay. I've read this passage before. Or at least I've heard the concepts before. That's nothing new. We know about the story of the Apostle Paul on the Damascus Road. We know about what happened to him. We know about how much he's into Jesus. Yeah, we get that. So what's the point?" Well, the point is, maybe this morning we need a different perspective from, instead of what we're thinking, and he's coming in telling us we're thinking wrong and we need to start thinking this way. I've said before I'm a political junkie, but I don't get into politics from the pulpit. You don't understand that. That's why I'm standing in front of it. No, I'm just joking. But no, I don't get into politics at all. I never go down that road. But I will tell you a couple things that happened. So I believe in our area, in our polling place, I believe I was number 5. I was there very early, and I'm standing there in line. And the first thing that happened was some people behind me started to say that they couldn't believe I had shorts on. That's the first thing, right? Because isn't this weather great? Oh, we have one. We have a couple people saying yes, or one at least. Yeah, this is great, right? So you would rather have that stuff we had a couple weeks ago? See, that's why I say this is unfair. See, you guys are never satisfied. You get a whole summer of that stuff, right? And I can't have this, you know? So yeah, so anyway, the weather, you know, it was kind of cool that morning. It wasn't as cold as it is now, but I'm still, you know, shorts. And I was asked just recently at one business I went into, they said, "Do you wear shorts year round?" I said, "Yeah, pretty much. That's pretty much the way it is, except for Sundays." So I'm there, and they saw that I was wearing shorts. But, you know, there's people that, if you've ever been to the polling places, it's always interesting that while they're there, there's a lot of things that happen. And at ours particular one, there was a TV camera that showed up. There was a van, the whole thing, and she's over there giving a report. And I started to chuckle with some people in line, saying I wanted to go behind her and go, "This is the end of the world," you know, and say something like that. But I didn't. But some of you did see me. I didn't know if it got on the air or not, but quite a few of you have told me about it. that while I was going in, they had the camera right here, and I just couldn't help myself. I had to smile at the camera and just walk in. So a lot of you saw me wave, so that was my big break, okay? I've been getting calls like crazy now to be on TV. It's amazing. So afterwards, I'll sign autographs, and right now they're free when I sign them, okay? They're free. But you know what's amazing is when you're in the polling place, right? I've always tried to understand this, and I'm sure there's a purpose. I'm sure it works for some, but there's always people outside of the polling place, isn't there? You ever experienced that? That somehow your mind isn't made up, and they're there to help you make up your mind. But they're not there to persuade you. They're just there to give you information to show you how they're right and how you need to vote in their direction. But it happens every time I go. They're always there, and they're always nice, aren't they? The nicest people in the world. I mean, that moment, they will do anything for you. They'll get you coffee. They'll get you anything in that moment. They're the nicest people, and they would even give you a free pen, you know, a free postcard that says, hey, I don't know if you've heard about me or not, but this is the campaign, and this is what we believe in, and then we take this in with you. Just go ahead and follow these instructions and just vote according to this, and here's a whole sample ballot if you want to vote according to that, and all of that. And so the whole purpose of that is to change your thinking, right? You show up and you're thinking this way. Now, I'm sure there's some that might show up and they're not sure, but I doubt it. I'm pretty sure everybody that shows up already has an idea what they're doing, and you're thinking this way, and their job is, I'm going to take the person who's going to vote this direction, and before they get in that booth, I'm going to get them to over here. That's going to be the purpose. That's a hard job, isn't it? Because if you've ever talked to anyone about politics, which, by the way, on Thursday you're not allowed to. That's what they say. When the family comes over, you don't talk about politics or religion, all that stuff, you know. But you're not supposed to. Why? Because people get emotional, and people have emotional attachments to some of their political beliefs, and all of that comes up. And but it's very hard to sway somebody from here, isn't it? Regardless of what side you're on, regardless of who you're voting for, it's very difficult, especially when they're already in line. Maybe it's happened, but I've never heard of anybody who said, you know what, when I showed up, I was voting for, but they gave me this nice pen. You know, I guess it's possible, but I've never seen. That's a hard job. That's the same thing that Paul is doing. It's a difficult job. Here they are, they're convinced Paul had left them, the heresies come in, they start teaching about Jesus isn't the way, Jesus isn't the Christ, and if it is Jesus, there has to be somebody else. Paul's writing back to them saying, no, you guys got this all wrong, and he says, I've been praying for you. What have you been praying for? I have been praying that you would go back to what I taught you from the beginning. Because for some reason, someone came along and shifted it from here over to here, and now I have to bring you back to what is true, to what I know to be true, because it happened in my life, because Jesus truly is the answer. That's really what our goal is here at New Hope, at church in general, isn't it? Isn't that the whole purpose of church? The reason we come to church is you come in, you might be thinking this way, and our job is to. And maybe when you leave the church, you're thinking, and then a week goes by, and you come back in, and then our job is to remind you of what you know to be true, because we're full of so many voices that are out there, so many people telling us the same thing that was happening in the church at Colossae. The world is telling us, Jesus, oh, come on. You're going to believe in that Bible? That ancient book of fables? Come on. You're going to pray to a God you can't even see? Come on. And then you come back in, you're over here, and then We read the scripture, we worship, have a message, we pray, whole purpose, so that when you leave, you're back over. Honesty Sunday, again, if you were to raise your hands, I wonder how many of you would say, yeah, that's happened to me before. Yeah, Chad, it's happened to me before where I've walked in here and I was, but before I left, man, I was. And some may even say, you know what? You know what, Chad? That's the only reason I come. I don't come because I have to. I don't come because I'm supposed to, because it's a good example to my kids. I don't come for that reason. All that's good. But I come, Chad, because I have to. Because I need. Because if I don't have that, Chad, I'm a mess, and I hear all the other voices that are out there, and before I know it, I start believing things that aren't true, and I start believing things that don't make any sense, and I start questioning God and questioning Jesus and questioning the scriptures and questioning his validity and questioning everything, because everybody out there is, so I have to. And some of you, without choice, spend probably every second of every day outside of this building hearing nothing but that junk. And you're surrounded by it. Everywhere you look, nobody's glorifying God. Nobody's honoring God. Everybody's making fun of God, making fun of Christians, mocking Christ, mocking the Bible, talking against it. It's ridiculous. Calling you old-fashioned. And maybe here on Honesty Sunday, if I was to ask for a show of hands, there might be some here today that would say, Chad, I need that right now. Because I came in here like this, and I need to change and go out like some of you might even be coming in wondering, where is God? Maybe you're asking the question of, where is God in our world, in our culture right now? Everything's such a mess. It doesn't make any sense. Or whatever, a situation that just hits you that you weren't even expecting, and it's just bam, and you're there. And is God even there? Does God even hear? I don't even know where God is anymore. And some of you may have even had that inkling, maybe that thought that would say, you know what? I don't even want to follow him anymore if this is the way it's going to be. And you know what? Many people have done that. Many people have said, you know what? If this is what following Jesus is going to be like, I'm not going to do it anymore. And I'm moving on in another direction. Is it possible that today you needed to be reminded of who Jesus is? And that he is the one who has reconciled you. He is the one who has transferred you from the dominion of darkness. He is the one who has saved you. He is the one who is the image of the invisible God. He is the one who was there from the beginning. He is the one that is through him and for him that all things were created. That he is the one that deserves your worship. He is the one that deserves your praise more than anybody or anything else that you can find out there. There is nobody else. Just Jesus. And my hope today is that all of us would see him in a way we have never seen him before in this moment, and we would hear his voice in a way that we have never heard in this moment, and that if any of us have walked in here with doubts, whether it's doubts about him, his existence, or if he's true, or whether it's doubts about whether he cares about you because of what you're facing, of all the doubts that you could possibly have, everything that could take place, that you would read what Paul is writing here and saying, here's a man who experienced it firsthand. He knows exactly what he's talking about. Who am I to question that? Jesus is real. He is the way. There is no other way. Lord Jesus, we thank you today for your word and for your truth. It is so easy for us to forget about you, especially when we're surrounded by those that question you. It is so easy for us to forget about the power of your word when we're surrounded by a culture that doesn't honor your word at all. It's so easy to forget about what it means to be Christian because that word Christian is thrown around so much now. Really has lost its meaning. But today, Jesus, I ask that you would reveal yourself to each of us in a way we have never seen you before. That you would make these scriptures that we know, that we've heard, that we've even memorized, or we've known the concepts of, that you would make these scriptures and make them alive in our life today. And we would walk out of here with boldness and with confidence and strengthened with all power according to your glorious might, as Paul prayed. Change whatever needs to be changed in us right now, Jesus, so we can face what's around the corner this week. Empower us, Jesus, to be the people that you desire us to be so that we would please you in every single way as Paul prayed. Show us what it means to truly follow you and to be your disciple. And we ask all these things in your name. In the name of Jesus.